This is All About Living with Carol Colby. All About Living is brought to you by Gunderson Funeral Home Cremation Care, Turville Bay MRI and Radiation Oncology Center in Madison. All About Living with Carol Colby.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome again to All About Living. I'm Carol Colby. Always a pleasure to be here with you at noon on Saturdays. And remember, if this isn't a convenient time for you to listen to the program, all programs are also posted on carolcobyradio.com. Carol Colby, K-O-B-Y, radio.com. And so you can listen at your convenience. And we're also on Facebook. All About Living has a Facebook page. And we're on Twitter and all those kinds of social media things that I can't even keep up with. But I have really good people here at the station that help me through it. And so I appreciate that, and they make it possible for you to have lots of accessibility to this program. We have a very special guest in the studio today, someone whom I've admired over the past more than a decade, actually, here in Madison for the wonderful work she is doing. And she's here because we're celebrating that work and the conclusion of at least this window of her life. It certainly isn't a retirement where she will continue to do nothing more. In fact, who knows what is going to come from the future life of Eileen Merchart, who has for the past 13 years been CEO of the YWCA in Madison. And that's quite an organization. It has a marvelous history. It is a nonprofit membership organization that was actually founded in 1909. And is a member of the National YWCA, which is an autonomous women's movement. Now, it's interesting to me when I look at 1909 and I think of women's suffrage, it wasn't until 1920 that women even got the vote. But there was a lot of work. And just like when we face some of the issues today, things don't happen overnight. And women were stirring and speaking out and looking out for the interests of women who were in challenging, difficult positions long before they finally obtained the right to vote. So things go around full circle, really, and they continue. What is it? The world unfolds as it should. I think the words from Desiderata. Anyway, the purpose of the YWCA Madison is committed to providing safe, affordable housing for low-income women, emergency shelter for homeless women and families, racial justice and restorative justice programs, education and training to ensure economic security for women and people of color, enrichment programs for girls to grow strong, healthy, strong, and confident, as well as safe transportation solutions. And the story of the YWCA is really a chapter in women's history and the history of the civil rights movement and the history of the United States itself as we struggle to continue to make ourselves a little better as we define it in the current times. It's a leader and a collaborator. The YWCA is at work to achieve positive change in the lives of individuals in the community. And Eileen, I mean, that's quite a list. And I doubt in reading that list and when you hear it that you think, boy, I wish we could accomplish, you know, the maximum and, you know, in all of those areas. But it's a process. It's all a process, and you're a part of that, and you've been a leader in it.
Thank you, Carol. Thanks for having me on your show. I really appreciate all of what you just said about our organization.
Magny says the GAB takes these incidents very seriously. He says destroying any official petition is felony election fraud. Dylan Brogan, Madison 1670,
WTDY. We can now say that we have a footprint in three centuries. It started in around 1850 in England and then moved to the United States. And the oldest YWCA in the U.S. boasts over 145 years or so. There's a dispute as to where the first one actually started and what year it actually started, but in 1860-ish, 45, and somewhere in there, Boston says it was the first. But now our organization in this country can really honestly say that as an organization we've sustained ourselves through so many because of so many individuals in this country, and that's true in Madison as well. We're over 100 years old here, and each year is, as the year unfolds, we become wrapped up in that incredible history through world wars, through the civil rights movement, through the women's movement, through anti-war movements, through help during World War II with veterans and those who were staying at home to support the war effort. Just an amazing record of this organization, always responding at whatever time in history it is to what the greatest needs were. And I think that is, over the last decade and or 13 years that I've been with the organization, that's really what we do. We say, what are our needs within our mission that we can address?
I remember 13 years ago when you accepted the appointment.
You do?
Yes, I certainly do.
All right.
I remember when you came on the scene at the YWCA, and I can't believe that 13 years have just flown by. And you
I can't either.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about you before we get into some of the remarkable work that has particularly been accomplished and started in the last 13 years under your leadership. Tell us about your background and how you got to the YWCA in Madison as its leader.
Well, it wasn't. It was a road that took some turns. I have spent most of my professional life either in academia, in government, or in the nonprofit sector. Those are pretty much the three worlds that I've been involved in. I graduated from UIC in Chicago with a bachelor's degree in history, and then moved up to Wisconsin after that, and had a couple of kids, most wonderful kids, who have now brought me most wonderful grandchildren, which is such a gift. And then proceeded while they were little to get an MSW at the University of Minnesota in Duluth. So I was able, with that degree, to teach at the University of Minnesota. I got my degree at UMD, but I taught at St. Scholastica in Duluth.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that area.
I know that area well. We have, since we've become friends and yes. I've known you, we've crossed paths on our history of Superior.
Yep.
I was born and raised in Superior, yep. And you have spent much time in Superior, yes. And the surrounding areas,
yes.
In Duluth.
I was on the city council in Superior for about 9 years.
Wow.
And then came down to Madison to be in Tony Earle's administration as Deputy Secretary of Revenue. And when Tony lost, I moved to Milwaukee for a bit and then came back to Madison, where I was the director of the National Association of Social Works Wisconsin's chapter, mm-hmm. Where we were able to pass the first certification bill for social workers. We were the last state in the union, I think, to do it. So it was time.
Oh, yes. I guess so that's unusual for Wisconsin. We often are leaders in those kinds of things.
Yeah, we were not. So we caught up, though, and we've stayed caught up ever since.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had the followed Hannah Rosenthal at the Wisconsin Women's Council for 6 wonderful years there. And then when it was time for me to really look about it, I was at the council, and the YWCA position opened up, and it was a walk across the square from me, from Carroll Street over to Mifflin. So I applied, and you are one of the few who remember.
I remember.
So, it was a wonderful opportunity, and I'd worked on social policy issues for the state. I've taught women's issues as in the School of Social Work at St. Scholastica, and the opportunity to kind of bring all of that together in a setting like the YWCA, where the values and mission of the YWCA to eliminate racism and to empower women, simply everything in my life converged. I tell people that I really grew up in the crucible of the civil rights movement, the women's movement, and the anti-war movement. And, you know, you don't come through that period, that so impressionable period of your life, you come out of it very differently. And I think that period really put me on a path to do all that I could to make this a better world. And you don't just listen to the speeches of Martin Luther King or John F. Kennedy or any of the leaders of that time. And not say, okay, you know, we have to do something here.
It's like a series of light bulbs go on as you mm-hmm. build awareness yeah. and you realize how great the needs are.
Yeah.
And by working in it, perhaps I think you have seen some of the steps that possibly could be taken to at least improve the situation.
Yeah, and that's what we've done with the various programs that we've started at the YWCA these last 13 years. We've said, you know, what are the barriers that women, children, and families have to reach their full potential? What's holding them back to secure jobs that will sustain themselves and their families in a good way? So we've just tried to look at all of them. Some of it is structural racism that just lives in our society. Some of it is education. Some of it is housing. And we've really subscribed to all of those barriers in all of those areas to try to make it barrier-free for people if we can.
We're going to stop for a break now, and when we come back, I'd like to look into some of those programs that you have established under your leadership at the YWCA and how you see these programs as they unfold being possible solutions to the problems that you say exist. Particularly, it's so sad to hear that racism still exists. You have, in combination with that, a restorative justice program, which we'd like to hear more about, and your work with girls and building their self-esteem
yes.
and giving mm-hmm. them the tools that they can be independent and self-sufficient in their own lives is just critical. It's critical to the whole goodness of our society.
It is.
Our guest today on All About Living is Eileen Merchart. She is the retiring CEO this month from the YWCA in Madison. She has been there for 13 years, and what a remarkable mark she has made on our community. This segment of our program has been brought to you by Turville Bay MRI and Radiation Oncology Center in Madison, where expertise with compassion is powerful medicine. We'll be right back after these messages.
This is All About Living with Carol Colby, Madison 1670, WTDY.
Welcome back to our program, and we're happy to have with us in the studio Eileen Merchart, who is retiring this month as CEO from the YWCA in Madison, a position she's held for 13 years. And Eileen, you have started so many programs under the auspices of the YWCA. They basically are an organization providing housing, emergency shelter, looking at the basic needs almost on, you know, Maslow's pyramid of self-actualization. You got to start with the basic needs, food, shelter, and
that's right.
Yeah, and so that's really how I look at the foundation of the Y, and then building up from there to help people become the best that they can be. Tell us first of all, what are some of the programs that have been initiated under your leadership in the past 13 years?
Well, in the area of housing, we've probably, I don't know, tripled the number of housing programs that we have. At 101 East Mifflin, our main building on the square, where we just completed a $16, $17 million rehab to that building, it is home to over a couple of hundred people every evening, permanent housing plus a shelter for homeless families. And
when you say permanent, how long do they typically live there?
Well, you know, we acquired the building in 1968, and it was the Belmont Hotel. And there are a few folks still who are living with us that came over when we got the building.
Really?
Yeah, not very many, but a few. So some stay a very, very long time. Others will stay with us for a shorter time, depending on their circumstances. Our Third Street program, which is a early intervention prevention programs for moms with one child, five or under, generally folks on that in that program within our building stay maybe a year, year and a half, 2 years, and then they've learned all they can and gotten their feet back on the ground and can move on to housing outside of the YWCA. But it is within the building, there is permanent housing. But outside of 101 East Mifflin, We made a very intentional decision several years ago that we would do what we could, instead of building another building, to leverage market rate apartments through various and sundry programs, both federal as well as foundation grants, plus congregations in the community. We've collaborated with the Road Home on this program, to on some of these programs, to bring to these market rate apartments that were not affordable through these programs, where we've been able to leverage other money to make them affordable. So to that end, today we probably have over 80, 86 units of housing scattered around Madison that are now affordable for people. Mm-hmm. We don't really have a horrible lack of housing. I mean, we've got housing. I mean, there are areas where we need more specific kinds of housing. As I was talking with the mayor yesterday, a group of us discussed this with him. We need more affordable three, four-bedroom apartments. But what we do have just wasn't affordable. So we looked at strategies where we could do that, and we succeeded in a number of programs. Housability, our Second Chance Apartment Project, which we do with the Road Home, rapid rehousing. So that area of housing has, we've probably doubled our housing in the last 13 years. In the area of employment and training, we have a number of programs that simply didn't exist 13 years ago to help women and minorities to break into the construction industry. One of the programs that we started a long time ago was called TRANS. It's now part of Construct U, which is a program where we help folks through the training partnership for the skilled trades and TRANS under the title of Construct U to learn the what they need to become apprentices in the various trades, and then to get into highway construction industry. So we've done a lot in the area of employment and training.
Is it difficult right now when the construction industry is not out there working and there are so many unemployed?
Yes. Yes, it is. We are somehow, through great work by our staff, Kevin over at the Empowerment Center, and Julie and her folks are able to help folks find jobs, but it's not everybody, and not everyone is able to after the fact. So it is tough.
And so that TRANS program, and mm-hmm. then what other programs?
Well, during the break, we talked a bit mm-hmm. about one of your favorites, I think, and certainly one of mine, is our Girls Inc. program. The YWCA is very proud to be a member of the Girls Inc. family of associations throughout the country. Girls Inc. isn't huge. The YWCA family is probably bigger, but Girls Inc. is very, very strong in our country and in Canada. And there's a reason for that. It brings really strong programming to bear for our girls, actually from very little girls all the way through high school. We've kind of focused on middle school age. We can't be everything to everyone. So mm-hmm. with what we've got and the resources that we have available, we work through three community centers in collaboration with them to deliver the Girls Inc. programming, after school programming. We deal with bullying. We deal with self-esteem issues. Pardon me.
Well, that's a vulnerable age.
It
middle
is.
School, they're going from being a little girl into the beginninghood
yes.
of being young women, and it's very vulnerable.
It is, and that's
and
so,
it's a good time to be there as a guide and to direct them.
I think so. We think so. That spark that you see in kids, little girls, you know, we've seen it. We see their eyes, and we see that they know there's such potential there, mm-hmm. and somewhere that spark goes away, and what Martha Lemnis, our Girls Inc. director, wants, and the coordinators at the community centers want, is to not let that spark die. And in middle school girls, you can lose it, and mm-hmm. you are so right. So, if we had more money, if we had more of everything, we could do the whole range of Girls Inc. programming, but we do what we can, and we've decided that middle schools is where we'll put our efforts. But when we talk about that spark going out, there's another program, and I don't know if we should talk about it here or if you want to save it for
a minute.
Well,
just mention it, and then we can do some more breakdown on the individual programs.
Sure. It's our racial justice work that, mm-hmm. that we're doing. And in particular, as a community, we've been examining the issue of racism both on an individual level, and we started there, like really trying to understand what it meant to have, to be allies with the African American community, with the Hispanic community, with any community that we have, where we, where the white community can be allies with the African American community and others, to stand with them in this battle against racism. So we've done a lot of work at, individually and collectively looking at white privilege and what it means to be white in this community or any community. You know, just understanding that when you walk into a store, no one's going to follow you in that store if you're white. They're just going to say, you know, you come on right in. But if you're not white, you can be pretty sure that someone's probably watching you go through the store, and it doesn't have anything to do with your income level. I've heard a lot of stories of people who've earned a lot more money than I'll ever make in my entire life who've had it happen to them. So just really understanding what that means, and the role of racism and how it rears its little head often, in ways seen and not seen. But one of the things that we have we decided along the path of working in the area of racial justice was to begin to look at it in a bigger picture, in what were the structural issues that were going on here. Why is it that Madison has some of the worst statistics on graduation rates, on incarceration rates for African-American kids? What's going on? So we've been working a lot with the criminal justice system, with the courts, with Brian Blanchard when he was DA and now as a judge, with Paul Higginbotham, with many mm-hmm. people who came to our racial justice summit a couple of weeks ago. They were there, as were a number of the members of the police department and others who are working with us on this issue of understanding their role and the role of the YWCA and how we can better deal with this issue.
We're going to stop for a break, and when we come back, we'll mm-hmm. see if you came up with any answers,
sure.
what the reasons are and how they present themselves, and if there are solutions that are beginning to be identified mm-hmm. to change this picture. Our guest today on All About Living is Eileen Merschart. She is the retiring CEO of the YWCA of Madison. And this segment of our program has been brought to you by Home Health United. You got a friend right here online at homehealthunited.org. You're listening to All About Living here on Madison 1670 WTDY. I'm Carol Kobe, and we'll be right back after these messages.
This is All About Living with Carol Kolbe, Madison 1670, WTDY.
We're talking about really the foundation of our society with our guest today, Eileen Merschart, who is the retiring CEO of the YWCA in Madison. Her first visit to this program, and I'm sorry that you are leaving the YWCA. You've been there for 13 years. I've been here for nearly 10 years, Eileen, and this is your first time here. But hopefully you will continue to make your mark on the community, and we'll have many more times to have you back.
Oh, I hope so. Thank
you. This is fascinating, hearing about the work that you've been doing with the YWCA, and particularly in the escalation of your work with girls, Girls Inc., building their self-esteem, anti-bullying, keeping that spark in their eyes of self-assurance, independence, resourcefulness to get them through life and on their own terms. And one of the areas that you're really working strongly in is eliminating racism. And you have a restorative justice program that kind of piggybacks mm-hmm. that racism. And it's surprising to hear I know we hear it from various circles, and those people who work with the issues talk about, yes, there is racism, but Madison, Wisconsin, of all places, you wouldn't think that racism would exist here. We seem to be an enlightened, educated, open, accepting community, and we're all in it together, and yet you say there is racism here in this community.
Yes, there is, and it's sometimes maybe not easy to see, but it definitely exists, and you can see it in some of the statistics that come out of our justice system. We have one of the highest incarceration rates for African Americans in the country. We probably are worse than Milwaukee. Our kids, there's a disproportionate of a number of kids of color that don't make it through high school, and we are really looking at that and working very hard to turn that around with the schools. To that end, we have a collaboration going now with several schools. We started as a pilot project at La Follette High School, and with the principal there and the staff at La Follette, we developed a model program that we tested out at La Follette around the principles of restorative justice, so that when a kid does something that would get the attention of the administration of the school, the first line of defense is not to expel the student or to put him or her on some kind of temporary dismissal from school, which at the end of the day accomplishes probably nothing positive.
And are you saying that children of young people of color are expelled or suspended more often than white students?
Yeah. So we, with the Follett, we've been able to really address this issue with the kids themselves. And we have a program where what the restorative justice program does is actually work with the students and train peers within the high school system to actually themselves, with a faculty member in the picture, conduct restorative justice circles, where if something was done within the school by a kid to another kid, depending on what it is, and the police don't need to be involved in it, it can be dealt with right there with peer-to-peer, and some restorative work can be done to address whatever happened, you know, people understanding better what the outcomes were of their behavior. And the other piece that has come, that better understanding sometimes of why some kids do what they do. So if they're late a lot, for instance, that can get you into big trouble, obviously. Or if you're missing school, you know, is the answer more to truancy, what is perceived to be truancy, mm-hmm. expelling a kid so that they're really not in school? No, the answer is not that. The answer is, in many, many instances, figuring out why the young student is truant to begin with. And in some instance, it could very well be that he or she has a younger sister or brother that may need rides to school because they may not be, they may need that kind of help. Could be unemployment in the family where the student has to do other things to keep the whole system going at home. And that, in fact, school is the one place on earth that this kid wants to be and can't get there. And understanding that, what I just described is an absolutely true story that came out through the restorative justice circles, and the kid's situation became apparent to the teachers and to the other students.
It's digging beyond the superficial into the reasoning behind.
And you can't do that overnight. In the restorative justice program doesn't work overnight. It works with really working with the students and with the school system. And now we're able, through the support of the United Way, we are able to bring the restorative justice this year to some more schools, so more high schools. So we're very pleased that our work at La Follette and the incredible cooperation that the La Follette staff gave to our staff in working on these principles of restorative justice have really borne fruit. And at our last Circle of Women luncheon, I think it was last February, we had two or three of the students who went through the peer counseling mm-hmm. training that we provided them so that they could run these circles. The pride that they had both in themselves and in their school in La Follette was palpable. I'm not sure if you were there, but if others were there.
Yes, I was.
You remember that I just stood there and one of those students said, I am so proud of my school. And I don't think he was a senior or a junior maybe, but you know that's a huge turnaround. And we're going to see more of these students staying in school and graduating. I say about this program as well as our Girls Inc. programming that I don't want to lose another kid. I don't want to lose another girl. I don't want to lose another young man. I want to keep them in school. I want that spark to stay alive because you never know if one of these kids might be the next president of the United States.
Exactly, and they're our future.
They are our future. One of these kids may find the cure to some disease that we've mm-hmm. been struggling with for decades, and keep that curiosity alive, keeping them in school and keeping them safe. And I know that that's what our school system and what our superintendent really want in our schools. We have seen it at La Follette. We are seeing it in other schools as well. We're all on that page. And I think as a community, we need to pull strongly behind our school system.
Well, you've obviously identified some paths of mm-hmm. a solution to these problems. What can, and you're working with other agencies, so there's a real strong core of people here who are dealing with the issues that seem to know what to do and can put in place some programs that will be helpful. What can the rest of us do? There are many listeners to this program right now, and what can we do to help eliminate racism or to encourage young people or to make our community better in some of the areas that you're addressing?
Well, not to be too self-serving, the YWCA offers a number of programs.
Take advantage of it. All be right, self-serving.
We offer a series of three sessions on understanding racism. The first one is going to be starting will have started when this show airs, but there are others. And if you're interested, checking on the YWCA's website, ywcamadison.org, and click on our racial justice icon, and it will lead you to all of the classes and courses that we offer, the workshops on understanding racism, understanding what white power is, white privilege is, and understanding how racism can finds its way into so many areas of our life unbeknownst to us. So just I think if people would take the time to really do that, they would learn a ton. I certainly did. My eyes have been opened over and over again since I began this work 13 years ago with the YWCA. And then getting involved in the schools. I know the United Way program, Schools of Hope, looking for tutors, always looking for tutors.
And you don't have to have children in the school system.
Oh, no, you don't. No, you don't. And if you're interested in Schools of Hope, pick up the phone, call United Way. They will get you involved in that program probably in a heartbeat. So working within the schools is I think, a really important one.
And in addition to helping with reading or whatever mm-hmm. the subject is, you could be a mentor to keep that spark going.
Absolutely.
Or light it in somebody by helping them see the value that they have and the strengths they have as an individual and where some of their core abilities are.
Right. Yes, absolutely true.
Well, that would be an excellent suggestion, and there are courses that YWCA teaches too.
Absolutely,
education for all of us is a great way to start. Learn the facts, and substantially gain some understanding before you move forward and do something or have opinions.
It's basically the path that, as an organization, we took. We wanted, as an organization, to really understand the issue of racism. And in 2002, the YWCA nationally in the United States reconfigured ourselves and rebranded our organization. And the new brand put up on our building, Eliminating Racism and Empowering Women. And I said back then, we need to understand this issue if we're putting it up on the building. We just can't sit around and have a pretty sign on our building. That didn't mean a thing. So we started at a kind of an individual basis where we started what we called community dialogues, and we brought in Lee Moonwaf and The Color of Fear as our very first dialogue on racism for the community. So we had a dialogue. We did. We had him. We've had other speakers come in and really focused on that one-to-one work that we need to do. We still have that, and we even had it in this last Racial Justice Summit, even though we did focus in a big way on systemic racism as well with our speakers.
We have to stop for another break. When we come back, we're going to let's talk about what now. I know you won't be there under the helm or at the helm of the leadership role, but you have the Rachel Krinsky, right, from the Roadhome?
Yep.
Yes, and she'll be taking over as CEO.
Yep.
And you've been working closely with her in that Second Chance Housing program and everything.
Yes.
So this will be, sounds like a smooth transition and somebody who really understands. But where do you see, what are the challenges of tomorrow as the YWCA works within wherever society is at the moment? What are the challenges you're facing and what are some of the expectations that we can look for from the YWCA? Our guest is Eileen Merschart, the retiring CEO of the YWCA in Madison, and you're listening to All About Living here on Madison 1670 WTDY. This segment of our program has been brought to you by Oak Park Place. Live life, live well at Oak Park Place. And we'll be right back after these messages.
This is All About Living with Carol Colby.
And we're back with our last few minutes with Eileen Merschart, the retiring CEO of the YWCA in Madison. And this segment of our program is brought to you by Gunderson Funeral and Cremation Care, the Life Celebration Center. And talking about celebration of life, that's what you are doing at the YWCA, where you're trying to take each life and have each life be a celebration by keeping that spark going. And you particularly focus on young people to accomplish this. You've been talking to us in this hour about your Girls Inc. program, the trans program, where you're developing employment skills, particularly in the construction industry, but other industries as well. And then you have your racial Eliminating Racism and Restorative Justice programs. And Eliminating Racism and Empowering Women are the two umbrella goals of the YWCA. You've got several programs going. With the YWCA, are you, do people come to you or do you go to people? Are you proactive in reaching out into the community where you see a need, or do you wait for people to walk through your door?
Well, in terms of our housing programs, people walk through the door and make application for housing at our building at 101 East Mifflin, or if they're interested in the other kinds of programs that we have, some of those come through referrals. Some of them are obvious. This isn't so obvious, but they have perhaps been on our shelter floor, and they can go move from our shelter floor into one of our the apartments that I talked about earlier that we were able to make more affordable through various and sundry programs, which we will not go into, funding sources. Our employment and training programs and our racial justice, we have a number of folks who come through the doors through word of mouth and through other agencies in the community.
I would imagine you're very connected with all the agencies that would have some relationship with you.
So people will come in because they want to get some of the training that we offer at our Empowerment Center at 3101 Latham. There is a program that I hadn't mentioned, which is our driver's license recovery program, which is being funded now through Dane County. We have not had funding for this program, but it's been a real if someone has lost their driver's license, not through drunken driving, we don't deal with those folks, but because of other things, people can lose their licenses for not paying attention to some parking tickets, doing things like that, and then they get themselves in a very, very bad situation. Try and imagine today getting anywhere without a driver's license, mm-hmm. and trying to work and get a job, and it's very, very difficult. So Joe Parisi and the county board, and to whom we are very grateful, understand the importance of this program and did fund it again this year, which is just excellent, to help people figure out what it is that they need to do to get their driver's licenses back, to clean it up. If they need to do some community service work to make it up, we can provide them with that. It's not a free lunch. You really need to know what it was that caused it. You need to fix it. But we are there to help you figure that out. So that's just another area where that door is closed. And if we can get your driver's license back in the right way, you've got opportunities for employment. So that's just another program that we're doing, which is very helpful. So yeah, we've got a number there. People will come to us because the county or the police department will refer them to us. So.
But then this program at La Follette, you were talking about the restorative justice, and you're going to be spreading that into other schools. I mean, these are initiatives that you are starting.
Right. Although the schools now, some of the other schools in Middleton and elsewhere are coming to us.
Because they see the success. Yeah, right. You've established it, and so then it's another word-of-mouth thing. There's a school-to-prism, the dismantling that school-to-prism pipeline is really important to you, isn't it?
It's hugely important to me. I didn't invent the term school-to-prison pipeline. The Children's Defense Fund out of Washington, Marion Wright Edelman's group, has done a tremendous amount of research on the issue of the school-to-prison pipeline and what the strategies are to break that that road to from school to prison, instead of school to graduating to secondary education to a fulfilling life. We were able a few years ago to acquire $650,000, which is now almost over, unfortunately, of appropriations money to help jumpstart a program that we called Communities of Hope. And it was within that money and under that umbrella of Communities of Hope that the Restorative Justice Program was born as a way of combating the school-to-prison pipeline. So it is really a part of a much, much bigger picture. And it just so happens that Madison sticks out like a sore thumb in the statistics that the Children's Defense Fund has produced. It's a very, very, very scary picture for us.
Besides not having a fulfilling life, just the cost of incarcerating these young people is just exorbitant. And talk about cost savings, but quality of life is first and foremost to have a fulfilling, rewarding life and using your potential, but keeping young people out of prison.
To that end, Carol, there are 7 YWCAs in Wisconsin, and interestingly enough, we're going to be meeting in November, and we're going to be talking as a group about talking to our legislators and others to show them, if they don't already know, what it costs, what the school-to-prison pipeline looks like, what it costs to educate a kid, and what it costs to incarcerate a kid. And wouldn't it make more sense to put that money behind each kid in school and to really make our schools strong, safe, and crucibles of education and not crucibles of anything other than that?
I'm just going to give you one minute to answer this last question because that's all the time we have left.
Oh,
but it's going to be a double question. Mm-hmm. And what do you see ahead for the YWCA? Where is their main thrust going to be? And then what's on the plate for Eileen Mercer beyond YWCA?
Let me answer the first part first. My successor, Rachel Krinsky, who has led the road home for the last 12 years, will be coming over to the YWCA. Her first day will be December 5th, and I expect that the YWCA is going to flourish under her leadership. She'll take it, as will the staff, to great places. I do think that for all nonprofits, though, challenges of funding are going to be enormous. What was the second one about me?
What about you?
I will say this. My daughter is expecting her second baby this month in November. And so that's going to be first and foremost is paying attention to that. There's no greater gift than these grandchildren. I'll tell you, it's the happiest thing in my life. And after that, I'm going to do some traveling with my partner. And then, as I mentioned at my retirement party, our country needs a lot of help, our state, our city, and our country. And I intend to be involved in helping to do what I can to address some of those issues, both at a state and national level.
Eileen Mershart, thank you so much for the service that you have already given our community, the YWCA, and we look forward to the continuing contributions you'll be making as an individual and a citizen of our state of Wisconsin, our community of Madison, and our country as a whole.
Thank you, Carol.
Appreciate your being here. It's, if you want more information, ywcamadison.org, or the phone number is 257-1436, area code 608, of course. And this information will also be posted on carolcobyradio.com when this program is posted sometime next week. So you can find that information there as well. Thank you, Eileen Mershart. Thank you, Morgan, for your great producing. Thank you for listening to All About Living here on Madison 1670 WTDY. I'm Carol Coby, and now go out and have a great rest of the weekend.